So we go to the customers and we explain what happened. Well, our reputation was customer comes first. So these guys will lay down in front of a train to slow it down if it's coming toward the customer. And this other company's reputation was it's all about them and don't care about anybody. So who did they blame? Not us. So even though we got hurt and the customers got hurt, all the blame went on to the company that did this to us and not us because we had superfans, basically. So surviving those kinds of roadblocks and having superfans can really make a difference in terms of helping you get through those tough times.
But I am the world's biggest superfan.
You're like a superfan.
Welcome to the Business Superfans Podcast. We will discuss how establishing business superfans from customers, employees, and business partners can elevate your success exponentially. Learn why these advocates are a key factor to achieving excellence in the world of commerce. We discuss the invaluable insights of business owners who have successfully implemented the strategies in the book to build their own team of devoted superfans. Gain insightful knowledge from the experts who create applications that help you create passionate superfans. This is the Business Superfans Podcast. With your host, Freddie D.
Freddie!
This episode is brought to you by our sponsor, Ninja Prospecting, the outreach team that makes cold connections feel warm and real. If you're tired of spammy DMs and the generic LinkedIn messages that go nowhere, Ninja Prospecting flips the script. They help coaches, consultants, and service-based business owners spark real conversations through strategic, human-first outreach. No bots, no fluff, just honest, data-backed messaging that sounds like you and actually gets replies. Talk to my friend Adam Packard and his team. Whether you want to do it yourself, get guidance, or fully hand it off, they've got you covered. Head over to ninjaprospecting.com and schedule a chat with Adam. Be sure to mention you heard about it right here on the Business Superfans Podcast. If you're ready to get started, join their free community at school.skool.com/ninja-prospecting-7704 to maximize your connections and make the right new ones. Hey, Superfans Superstar, Freddie D here. In this episode 132, we're joined by Joe Rando, a seasoned entrepreneur and the founder of Lifestar, a platform dedicated to helping solopreneurs build businesses that truly serve their lives. Over the course of more than three decades, Joe has worn many hats: physicist, real estate developer, tech founder, and now solopreneur advocate. He's developed nearly 1 million square feet of retail real estate, co-founded and exited a successful enterprise software company, and launched multiple ventures along the way. Today, Joe channels all of that expertise into supporting solopreneurs through Lifestar and the Aspiring Solopreneur podcast, where he shares practical tools and insight for thriving as a one-person business. He is also the co-author of the upcoming Solopreneur Business for Dummies and the creator of the Solopreneur Success Cycle, a proven framework for starting, running, and improving solopreneur businesses. We're excited to dive into Joe's journey and explore what it really takes to build a business that supports your life, not the other way around. Welcome, Joe, to the Business Superfans Podcast. You and I had a little bit of a conversation before we started recording. We got a little bit of similar background in Massachusetts, and I used to spend a lot of time there in the 80s and early 90s. So welcome to the show.
Thank you. Thank you, Freddie. Good to be here.
So let's go back to your beginning here, and what is your backstory?
It's a long one, but going back, after I decided not to try to become a rock star anymore when I was in high school, I went to school, got a degree in physics, an undergrad degree, and then went off into the fiber optics industry, where I was developing, as I mentioned to you offline, basically tools that would allow you to communicate data quickly over optical fibers. Quickly meaning like 10 megabits, 100 megabits kind of thing. And then, of course, Twisted Pair came along and was able to do that for much cheaper. And I was very glad that I had moved on beyond that. But the idea was I wanted to start a business for myself. I was always excited about that. My dad was an entrepreneur, and I wanted to be an entrepreneur as well. He convinced me to go get an MBA. which I did in like a year and a half. I just kind of crammed through it with a baby on the way. Another story. But once I did that, I saw an opportunity to develop shopping centers. This is back in like 1990. Home Depot was coming into the Northeast. All these big box stores, they called them category killers. I had developed some technology in grad school, figure out where to put shopping centers and use that, and was able to do about a little under a million square feet of shopping centers over the course of the 90s and early aughts. And then I spun that software into a separate company with a partner, and we created a company called Trade Area Systems and ran that and selling to a lot of the biggest retailers and biggest real estate developers in the world. Sold that in 2020. And now I'm doing Lifestar. Everybody thought I was retiring after that, right? But I don't have that in me. My father failed miserably at retirement, so I didn't even want to try. And so I just started life, looked around a little bit, found that there's tens of millions of solopreneurs and one-person businesses just in the U.S. and wanted to find a way to help them and bring them together. And we have a place for them on the internet. I call it a hub. And there's tools, there's community, there's content, there's courses, and all kinds of things to help solopreneurs run their one-person businesses to serve their lives.
Wow, what a backstory. And yeah, you're right. There's a lot of solopreneurs out there, and you can only talk to yourself so much.
It gets lonely, and it's nice to bring them together.
Yeah, because you can't really brainstorm by yourself. It's not just lonely. You can only regurgitate your own stuff so much. And sometimes it's really important to just get an outsider perspective, because what you may think is a brilliant idea, five other people will say, man, that thing doesn't have any legs.
Yeah. Or just things that people, I'm going to do pay-per-click advertising, and somebody comes in and says, yeah, that's a really good way to light money on fire. And it's like, you really want to think that through before you start spending a lot of money. And I love bringing people from different backgrounds. You've got a tech person and a life coach and a web developer, and they're talking, is the perspectives are different, but the problems are very much the same, and they bring new ideas. So it's really good to see just the bringing people together, never mind the stuff that we can help them with ourselves.
Sure, because when we both have worked with different companies, you've got a lot of challenges that you've got to deal with, because as a solopreneur or even a small business, you got the marketing to do, you got the sales to do, you got the customers to deal with, prospects, and you got the team to deal with. And so all that comes into play. As a solopreneur, you're wearing all the hats.
Right.
And that can become really daunting, and you can really start realizing that you're actually not going forward. You're actually sliding backwards, because at the end of the day, you can't do it all yourself.
Right. And that's one of the things we encourage. It's like one of our kind of catchphrases is just, you know, flying solo doesn't mean you're alone. And really trying to get people to think, yes, you're a solopreneur, you're the only employee, but you can contract with other people. You can hire companies to do things to help you. And it's not cheating to get some help with whether it's bookkeeping or marketing or whatever it is, but getting somebody to help you, and a virtual assistant, is a really smart thing to do, because your time is valuable doing the things that you get paid to do. And the amount of time that you spend doing things that you aren't necessarily good at or don't bring a lot of value is really wasted time if you can get somebody else to do it for you and use that time more productively.
Sure. One of the things I've learned is that 80% as good as you is 100% you not doing it.
Good point. Good point. And a lot of times, be honest, when you talk about all these different kinds of tasks that need to be done, you're not getting 80%. You're getting 120%, maybe 150%. If I were doing the bookkeeping versus the person that does the bookkeeping, it would be a lot worse if I were doing it. Because number one, sure, I would hate it and I would avoid it. And I would rush through it.
And have a mess.
Right.
And then you got to pay double to get it fixed.
Cleaned up, because, exactly.
For example, I was running a interpreting and translation company, and the business has been around for 30 years with a husband and wife team. And unfortunately, he passed away, and I was there and as a director of operations and stepped into the GM role. And that was the goal, really. They were going to retire, and then I was just going to run the company, and they're going to go travel the world. And once we took it over, and it was like, looked at the books and they were a mess. And so we ended up having to bring in a forensic CFO to come in and clean it up.
Yep.
And those guys are not cheap. And that was like 6 months worth of cleaning up, because they had to go back multiple years back. So that's one of the reasons I bring it up is, yeah, you may hate to do it, but the reality is you're going to end up spending a ton of money because you probably did it wrong. You got things wrong categorized. You wrote off stuff that you shouldn't have wrote off, and et cetera, et cetera. And that took 6 months to get those books cleaned up so that we could position the company for sale.
Yeah, that's crazy. Another thing that people can do and don't do enough of is automating, right? Using tools to take away manual tasks. And it takes a little bit of an investment, sometimes of some money and some time to set it up. But boy, what a difference. Somebody comes in and fills out a form on your website. Well, have an automated email response that says, hey, we got this, we're looking at it, we'll get back to you soon. Instead of just leaving them ghosted, just that little changes like that can have a huge impact on a number of people that you close because they get an immediate response.
One of the things I always tell people is you got a 15-minute window when you get a lead in from the internet.
Yeah.
15 minutes. And you need to contact them more than just an automated. The automated, I agree with, it should go back, says, hey, we received it and somebody will be contacting you shortly. And you need to be Johnny on the job and actually respond to that. I've closed more sales because I was the first guy that responded. And in turn, I can set the bar if they're going to still go shopping, and I can put the bar really high.
Right.
And I have the credibility right off the bat, and I've closed them right on the spot many, many times.
But timeliness is huge, and it's hard for solopreneurs because, again, like you say, if not all, you're still doing a lot of it. And it's tough. The cost of stopping this and going over and doing this, that cognitive load of having to change, you're doing some deep work, and all of a sudden now you've got to go and pick up the phone and call somebody or respond to an email personally, and it costs you a lot of time to shift those gears. It's challenging. And one of the things that we encourage is creating standard operating procedures. So when you're doing some of these things, you're not thinking about how to do it, right? You've got it right there.
There's your checklist.
Yep. This is what I do. And then you take some of that cognitive load away, just working through it. There's a lot to being a solopreneur, but the reason people do it, what I've learned, and it's one of the things that people don't talk about enough, I believe, is that people want to build a business that serves some aspect of their life, right? They're not about scaling at all costs. I know we hear these talks about the first $1 billion one-person business, and I'm sure it will happen. Like I alluded to, when I was in high school, I wanted to be a rock star, and people become rock stars. Of all the people that want to become rock stars, very few of them do. Same thing with being a famous actor, right? There's lots of actors, but the ones that get the big bucks are pretty few and far between. So most of these people aren't doing it to try to become a multi-millionaire or billionaire. They just want to be able to get to their kids' games. They want to be able to do the kind of work they want to do, or they want to be able to quit working at 5 every day. They want to be able to drop everything and go golfing when the weather's nice. Whatever it is, they've got some reason or reasons that don't involve scaling at all costs. And I've done both. My first business was a solopreneur business as a real estate developer. And I did it that way because I didn't want to have to continue developing real estate if the market wasn't good. I just wanted to be able to stop and not do anything when it was a good time to stop. And that was a kind of a lifestyle decision. I didn't want to have to try to carry people when things were tough. And I find that there's very few people that are delusional enough to think that, even though there's a lot of people selling this, many that think they're going to work 4 hours a week and make $20,000 a month. It's great if you can do it, but most people don't. They want to just have a job the way they want it to work. It's their work and their life. And so that's what we try to support.
Sure. There's a lot involved into it. That's what everybody starts out to having a business so they can have a lifestyle. But a lot of times they end up putting in 80 hours a week because they don't have the systems in place. They don't outsource some of the stuff. And so they're doing it all themselves. And it becomes overwhelming. And right. So now they're basically chained to that job because it really, it's a glorified job. Because if you can't walk away from it and it doesn't run by itself, you get a glorified job.
And I don't want to overstate the fact that there are people, that's what they want, right? They want a job that they control. They don't want to have a boss, but they don't want necessarily to build, there's all this talk about building this thing that works while you sleep. And that's great. But not everybody either has the skill set that applies to that, or that's not what they want to do. They like what the work they're doing. If you think about a life coach, these people, by definition, are typically one-on-one, face-to-face or virtual face-to-face with their clients. Some of them can come up with some courses and things that people can take, and that's great. But the core of that work is one-on-one, and it doesn't scale very well. But there are a lot of people that are really happy with that kind of work. And you can call it a glorified job, but it's a glorified job that they want and that meets their needs and satisfies their professional goals and personal life goals if they're doing it right. And so that's really what it comes down to, is just like having life on your own terms as much as is possible. Anybody working 8 hours a week, that's a great way to start sometimes. And certainly when I was an entrepreneur starting businesses with employees, it was pretty typical and it was expected. But solopreneurs aren't looking for that to be the long haul, typically. That's something else.
Totally makes sense. And I think that the other thing that people overlook is that a lot of people think that once they get the deal, you know, the sale's done. And I always look at it as, no, that's just the beginning. You just got the paperwork out of the way.
Mm-hmm.
The sale is everything that happens after the paperwork.
Absolutely, 100%. I was cracked up about these. I see these people, this especially going back a few years, and they would, we just raised $5 million from venture capitalists. We're a success. And I'm like, that's just the beginning. Now you've got to make that work. And it's the same thing with the sale. You get the sale. I remember I had this piece of land and I was working on it for years and I believed in it strongly, but I couldn't get anybody to pay attention to it. And all of a sudden, Home Depot comes along and signs a deal. And I remember that being one of the worst days of my life. And it wasn't because I wasn't a good thing, but once that happened, I was now $600,000 in the hole. Because what they were paying to get the land, what I had to spend to make everything happen, was negative $600,000. So I had to sign a whole bunch more deals to make up that difference before the checks had to be paid, before the bills had to be paid. And it was really scary. It's one of those things where you look and you say, hey, this is the beginning. You signed the deal, now you got to make it real. And there's a lot there. So that was my best example of that kind of, oh, here we go. But it all worked out. I immediately signed, believe it or not, next thing was Wendy's. And then I got Target and Kohl's. And so all was good. We made it.
Yeah. But the bottom line there is, to create those super fans, it's creating that experience. So you created super fans out of those organizations because you were able to deliver and create what they were looking for. And that opens up more opportunities because super fans is your best sales force.
It really comes down to understanding what people need and then giving it to them. One of the ways to build super fans is to kind of go out and be helpful without expecting really anything in return. And I see this in so many successful people that just give. They're not sitting there going, oh, I can't show that. That's my secret sauce. Because you know what? What you're doing is hard. And even if you tell everybody exactly how you do it, when they start thinking about having to do that along with everything else they got to do, they're going to be like, I'm going to hire that person to do it because it's too much. I try to go out. We have these free events for solopreneurs, virtual events, and they come on and we have like speakers that talk about topics that to help solopreneurs. We have like ones where we put them in breakout rooms together and they help each other address their problems. And we just give it away because you know what? People appreciate it. They know that we've got their backs. They know that we're out to help them as solopreneurs. And the next thing, they're joining our community, they're coming into the online community and taking advantage of the things that we offer. It's really the right way to go. Just really set out to help people. Don't be thinking about what you're going to get out of it. And good things happen.
That was my biggest success in the CAD/CAM world that I was in for several decades, was my customers was my sales force. My fastest sales was 30 minutes. I've said this story many times. I got a phone call. And the guy basically said, so-and-so said, I need to buy this stuff because I'm doing work for them. How much? How fast can you get it? The 30 minutes was me filling out the paperwork to make sure the configuration was right and everything else to get it to him. But sale was done. He didn't even care about the price. That was it, because I had a super fan tell him, Joe, you need to get this.
Yeah.
And that's it. And he goes, okay, well, what I got to do? Well, call Freddie D, man.
It's absolutely true. And I'll tell you another story about superfans. It's a little different, but this is going back to Trade Area Systems. And we had a product that we were reselling. So we had our own products and we also kind of baked in some other people's software and data into our systems. And it was one of the first reseller deals we had signed. And we were busy, crazy, and I just signed their paper. Typically, I would review all the documents and negotiate and make changes, and I just signed their documents. So we had built this software into our system, And we had a couple of key customers relying on it, like three customers that were like six-figure a year customers relying on it. And we get a notice 3 days before the renewal date, which was auto renewal. We're not renewing. They just guess they decided we were competing with them or something. So we were stuck. We didn't have access to this software that was kind of driving these systems, and we didn't have any way to make anything happen magically overnight. So we go to the customers and we explain what happened. Well, our reputation was customer comes first. These guys will lay down in front of a train to slow it down if it's coming toward the customer. And this other company's reputation was it's all about them and they don't care about anybody. So who did they blame? Not us. So even though we got hurt and the customers got hurt, all the blame went on to the company that did this to us and not us, because we had superfans, basically. So surviving those kinds of roadblocks and having superfans can really make a difference in terms of helping you get through those tough times.
Sure. I'll just use a funny example. Look at the Chicago Cubs. They got superfans. It took them 100 years to win a World Series, but the fans stayed with them thick and thin.
Except from Boston.
I get it. But the reality of it.
No, I get it. I'm just saying we didn't have to wait quite 100 years, but it was close. What was it?
Yeah.
1918 to 2004?
Right. Same thing.
Yeah.
But the super fans stay thick and thin.
Yep.
So, Joe, let's get into a little bit more about what's LifeStar all about.
Well, I'll give you the longer version of the story. So basically, when I sold Trade Area Systems, I was looking for something to do because I didn't want to be a retired guy. And I had an idea for an app, and I had an idea for something I wanted to buy. And I couldn't find it. So when we sold Trade Area Systems, I said, I think I want to think about building this app because nobody makes it. And I think it would be useful. So I started to build the app. I got some programmers involved. And the question was then, who are we going to sell this app to? So the idea for the app was basically a task management system combined with kind of a social network. So instead of, like, if you look at these things like Asana and Trello and Monday.com and ClickUp, where you can manage tasks together, but it's your team, right? It's all about your team. Right. And I wanted to be able to assign it to anybody, even somebody that didn't use the app. And So I started thinking about it and we started to build it. And then we said, well, who are we going to sell it to? And so I was working with a contractor. She does our marketing. Her name is Carly Reese. And actually, she and I are writing Solopreneur Business for Dummies together now, but talk about that later. So she says, what about solopreneurs? You're talking about working beyond your team. They don't have teams. At least they don't have employees. That would make a lot of sense. And I said, that makes a ton of sense. Where do we find them? And we couldn't find any place to find them. And I'm like, oh, bummer. And then I looked a little deeper and found out that there's literally tens of millions of them in the U.S. If you look at like one-person businesses and gig workers, there's probably 70, 80 million of them. But the ones that are kind of truly entrepreneurial, there's probably 30-odd million, approximately. And just in the U.S., never mind Canada and the rest of the world. So he said, let's build a place for those people, because we're not going to sell this app if we don't have a place to sell it. So forget about the app for now. Let's build a place for people. And that's what we've been doing. And engaging solopreneurs, they come in. And like I said, we've got tons of content, like literally probably 20 books worth of content that we've created just for solopreneurs on different topics. We've got online events. We've got AI tools trained specifically for solopreneurs to answer business questions from that perspective. Because it's very different than the perspective you would get as a subject matter expert or as a person that works for an employee-based company. Solopreneurs are different. They need that 20% that's going to get them 80% of the results. So it's right. A different thing. So we've built out an AI for that, courses, continually building courses and that kind of thing. So really just trying to build a place where these people can kind of up their game, keep up with changes, learn from each other, and just have a community. We even have like a virtual water cooler. So just if you're bored, you can pop into this thing. And if anybody else is at the water cooler, you can have a little chat. Doesn't actually produce water, but just a virtual hangout place for people. Because this is things that solopreneurs, not all of them, but a lot of them miss from corporate is just having other people. So that's the long and the short of it. We're just a bunch of people that are trying to build businesses in service of our life and don't necessarily want to do it alone.
So do you have any stories of some people that have transformed and became a super fan from the being part of that community?
A bunch, actually. A couple of examples come to mind. One woman came to us and it was like, I don't know how I'm going to make rent. And she got involved in our paid tier. So this kind of office hours to work on problems and things. And she actually increased her sales 407%. And that was enough for her to start actually being able to get by fine and put some money away and that kind of thing. And she's still doing great to this day. Has created a new business beyond the one that she already had that she's very excited about, that we helped with. Another gentleman, when he first started with us, he did basically like animation for videos and things. And he was having trouble getting customers. He just came in and hung out and brainstormed. And he developed this new model for funding these things, because a lot of them were educational, just by brainstorming with us and other people in the community. And sadly, we don't see him as much anymore because he's too busy, which is a great thing to have, a great problem to have. Sure. But he completely turned his business around from struggling to get customers to the point where his biggest challenge now is finding contractors to help him do the animation. So yeah, there's things like that. And it's just a matter of, number one, getting that outside perspective, getting ideas from people that have solved problems that in ways that you might never think of. And a lot of times niching down, like a lot of times, unfortunately, solopreneurs, they say, whatever it is, I'm a contractor, I'm a programmer or a life coach or this or that. And they can help all these different people, but they don't understand that even though you can help this many people, nobody's going to hear you if you target them. And you've got to get that thing focused down to a chisel point and say, this is who I'm going after. These people with this problem, and get it as niche down as you can. So when that one person comes along and sees what you do, they say, I have to go to them. Because you're better off getting that one person than getting ignored by 100 people.
Sure.
So that's one of the things we really help people with, is just kind of narrowing down that offer to really target someone.
That's really important, because I used to attend BNI, as I'm sure you've heard of the group. I've actually met Dr. Ivan Meisner, and I've come up with a saying, to be terrific, you need to be specific. And if you're specific, you will be terrific.
Yep. You got to be focused on that offering and who you help, how you help them. And then the other thing isn't always a killer, but it can be sometimes, depending on how people are getting customers. But sometimes just the websites, that big hero section at the beginning of the homepage of the website, it's their name. And it's like, but what do you do? And so trying to get people to realize that you got about 3 seconds to get people's attention. What you do and who you do it for should be front and center, and then you can talk about yourself a little further down. So we've helped a lot of people get their websites converting better and just understanding what, taking that perspective from the person that's looking and try to get them to say, hey, this is what I'm looking for when they see that website.
Sure. You also mentioned that you are writing a book.
Yeah, the Dummies book series, Wiley does, and started with DOS for Dummies back in the 80s. And they've got a number of books, but they didn't have one on solopreneur business. And so we went to Wiley and they said, yeah, I would like to do it. So we're writing Solopreneur Business for Dummies, available for pre-order on Amazon and Barnes & Noble, coming out in early October. And it's a soup to nuts book. We're building it around something that I developed called the Solopreneur Success Cycle. And the idea is there's a process of starting a business. With a solopreneur business especially, you should start with your goals. Why are you doing this? What is your reason for doing a solo business, right? If it's to become a billionaire, we might want to think about the employees. And so starting with those goals, why you're doing it, then this process of kind of envisioning the business, once you decide what it is you want to do, planning it out, setting it up, and then we go into executing, right? So then you got to execute the business and learn from the process of executing, because you didn't get it right the first time. And then once you've done that for a little while, go in and assess the situation and figure out what it is that, you know, you might want to change, deciding which things you want to change, making those changes, going back into executing. So then from here on, it's a virtuous cycle of getting that business better and better. So the entire book is built on this concept, and it really helping solopreneurs build businesses that serve their goals. And that's, we always come back to those goals. So it's very different from a typical, even small business book. But we do cover all the basics in terms of things like P&Ls and all those things you really need to run a business. But we do have this very kind of goal-oriented, lifestyle-oriented perspective on things to make sure that people aren't building a business they hate running.
Sure. And goal setting is the first important step. One is knowing why. And then what's your objective?
Yeah.
And because your objective, AKA your goal, helps you define the roadmap and what you need to do to get there. Because otherwise you're just winging it and really life gets in the way and starts blowing you around and you'll never get to your goal.
I had an experience once where I built a business that I hated running. And it's not a good thing. It's one of those things where you can wake up and go, wow, I am not having a good time here. The version of the story is it was that first go around with the software that I alluded to earlier. And it was 1994. I built this software when I was getting my MBA, and I was using it to figure out where to go out and tie up land for shopping centers. And in 1994, I got a phone call from a guy that worked for DeBartolo, who was a big mall developer in those days. Now, I think they own the 49ers, but they were a big mall developer. And this guy heard about your software. It turned out the professor I was working under in school, and I'd like to license it. And I'm like, world just beat a path to my door. So I started this company called Retail Analytics and started hiring. I hired a couple of programmers. I hired a sales guy. And the sales and marketing guy comes in and very quickly ties up a six-figure-a-year recurring revenue deal. And we are like, there you go. This is the beginning. And we never closed another sale for the software. And what happened was, if you remember 1994, if you know anybody that can go back that far, that was the kind of the year the internet hit. Sure. By 1995, every retailer was wondering if there were going to be stores in 10 years. So nobody was investing big money in retail site selection software. So we were just pushing on a rope. So they still needed to do site selection. They still needed to figure out where to put stores. So now they were hiring us to run the software and do the analysis for them. And we were producing reports. So basically, I'm a huge fan of recurring revenue. I came out of the shopping center business where you're collecting rent every month. Went into the SaaS business, software as a service was what I was doing kind of early. They didn't have that name back then, but selling the software every year over and over again.
You had the yearly 20% maintenance on the software back then.
No, but we were selling the full bore every year for six figures. So it was a full renewal. It was a great business model, but you needed more than one customer to make it work. So then I started doing reports. So we do these analyses and reports, and there was all this work. And I like to joke that you were just earning your lunch every day. You had to work for your lunch every day. And so it just got to be so tiresome. And we still weren't making any money. And so I basically kind of gracefully shut the thing down in 99. So I kind of had a five-year life, and then it just had to shut it down. But I did it gracefully, stayed close with all the tech people that were doing the work, and they ended up all together at a big company. And then one of them got interested in doing it again in 2004, when it was clear that stores weren't going away. And he came over, we teamed up, and that was Trade Area Systems, and that did really well. But the timing's everything, right? You miss the internet. Sure.
I remember those days vividly because that was the beginning. It was really early on. I remember we started having email at the company. I was a district manager for a place. And the next thing you know, they said, well, now that we can communicate online and we can send you files and all that stuff, we're going to have everybody that's remote work from home.
Wow.
And that's really 1995 is when I converted from being in a shared executive suite to working in my own place.
Wow.
Because we had internet. And it wasn't high speed.
Yeah.
But you weren't doing no video conferencing, but you were at least emailing, going back and forth.
Right.
And that was the beginning of it.
That's crazy. Wow. So that 1995. Interesting.
Yep. Yep. Because, 96 ended up working for a company out of Toronto and then switched over to a UK company and then moved to Arizona because I was the Western regional manager for everything west of the Mississippi. And you can't really manage that from Chicago. So I came out here and I communicated with them all through the internet.
Yeah, it was a big change. And then obviously COVID has completely cemented that change, boy. I still have an office I can still do some property management. I have a property management business and three people in the office. They don't want to leave. They don't want to work from home. So we still have that.
It goes back to that. But the reason it goes back to the camaraderie, which is why you created LifeStar, is the fact that they don't want to work from home because then they're by themselves.
Right, exactly.
You know, my wife has been working for a hearing aid company for over 7 years now. She works from home. But they have virtual get-togethers. They bring the team in every so often into the corporate headquarters. So people have camaraderie and it's a multi-day event. And they pay for all that stuff. And that's how they do it. And she's been there and she's super happy. She's one of the top salespeople. And because of the way they handle it.
That's good that they do that. We don't have that luxury as solopreneurs as much. I have that, the woman, Carly Reese, that I'm writing that book with, Solopreneur Business for Dummies. I started working with her back at Trade Area Systems in 2016. She was part of an agency I hired. And so we are talking basically 9 years. I've never met her. I've never met her and face to face. So yeah, we're going to meet in September at a conference, but it's pretty funny to go on that long and never have a face to face.
Sure. Wow. That's crazy. It's crazy. So Joe, as we come closer to the end here, how can people find you?
Yeah. So lifestar.com is the best way to kind of connect up with the community. I'm there all the time. And Lifestar, star has two R's. So it's lifestar.com. My email address is joe@lifestar.com. If anybody wants to email me, I am also on LinkedIn. That's my primary social network. It's just Joe Rando on LinkedIn. And those are the best ways to reach out. But any solopreneur is interested, whether you're just getting started or established, both are welcome. Lifestar, we have a free tier to the community that gets you access to a number of things and a lot of searchable content and a basic version of our AI. So check that out. Also, and we also have a podcast called The Aspiring Solopreneur, which is available on all the major podcast platforms. So anybody that's interested in solopreneurship, it's definitely worth checking out. We do both interviews and kind of subject matter episodes, and people really seem to like it.
Well, excellent. We'll make sure all that's in the show notes.
Thank you.
Thank you again for your time today.
Thank you.
And you and I could probably talk about this stuff for hours. So definitely would love to have you on the show down the road again.
That'd be great. Excellent. Well, thank you, Freddie. Take care.
What a powerful conversation with Joe Rando. Today's pillar is unite, create stakeholder alignment, building a unified culture by aligning your team, partners, and vendors around shared goals. Joe reminds us that even solopreneurs don't have to do it alone. By connecting with others, outsourcing tasks, and creating communities like Lifestar, he showed how alignment transforms isolation into collaboration. Here's your challenge. Look for one area of your business you're holding on to alone and invite somebody in to help. The result? You move from wearing every hat to building a circle of support that shares your vision. And remember, one action, one stakeholder, one superfan closer. Until next time, keep building your business, super fans. Thank you for listening. And know this, when you do, freedom follows. Hey, one more thing before we sign off. What if your employees, your customers, and even your partners became your biggest advocates? Imagine referrals flowing in, clients staying loyal, and a business that scales sustainably, not forcefully. That's what we're building inside the Superfans Growth Hub, the community for service-based business owners who want proven strategies, my Superfans framework, and a supportive network to accelerate results. So if you're ready to outpace your competition and build a business powered by Superfans, join us today at superfansgrowthhub.com. Once again, that's superfansgrowthhub.com, and I'll see you on the inside.
We hope you took away some useful knowledge from today's episode of the Business Superfans Podcast. The path to success relies on taking action. So go over to BusinessSuperfans.com and get your hands on the book if you haven't already. Join the Accelerator community and take that first step in generating a team of passionate supporters for your business. Join us on the next episode as we continue guiding you on your journey to achieve flourishing success in business.